Friends are people who stick by each other through thick and thin. But how many of us would go to jail for a friend? In an era when activism across racial lines was uncommon, four Seattle activists made an unusual alliance, and it paved the way for social change. From KUOW's City of Dreams team, Ruby DeLuna tells us how their friendship gave minority communities visibility in white Seattle.
They were called the Gang of Four. The nickname refers to local civil rights leaders Roberto Maestas, Bob Santos, Bernie Whitebear, and Larry Gossett. They grew up poor. They came of age in the 1950s and 60s. They lived in Seattle's inner city and experienced firsthand the effects of discrimination.
All of us had little things that happened to us in our youth that made us think that, you know, some of this stuff wasn't right.
King County Councilmember Larry Gossett says they wanted to change that. Gossett is the last surviving member of the group. At the time, Gossett was a young student at University of Washington and co-founded the Black Students Union. It was the height of the civil rights movement. The group's goal was to make the education system accountable to Black people. Making their voices heard meant protests, marches, and sit-ins. That's when he crossed paths with Maestas, Santos, and Whitebear, who were also leading protests. They were rallying for native fishing rights, equal employment opportunities, and farm workers' rights. Soon, they started supporting each other's efforts. It seemed like a natural thing to do.
I've been in jail with all three of them before.
You have?
Yeah, King County Jail.
Incidentally, Gossett's office on the 12th floor of the courthouse was the same space where he was jailed for staging a sit-in in 1968. And it wouldn't be the last time. In 1970, he and the gang joined Bernie Whitebear in a protest that would make headlines. This Como TV archive documented the occupation of Fort Lawton in Magnolia.
Armed with sleeping bags and food, the Indians tried to claim a portion of the Army post for a cultural center.
Often they brought their supporters with them.
But they found little culture inside an Army jail.
Politicians eventually agreed to meet and negotiate. The site would become home to the Daybreak Star Cultural Center. Through it all, the four men became friends.
We just liked each other and got along with one another, could jive with one another and not get mad.
But it wasn't just their friendship that made their alliance special, says historian Trevor Griffey. It was unusual at the time for minorities to work across racial lines. But in this case, he says, they inspired each other.
They shared tactics and strategies with each other. And they more or less, while working within different communities, they recognized that they were part of a broader social movement that connected racial justice and economic justice.
Griffey co-founded the Seattle Civil Rights and Labor History Project. He says in some ways, Seattle's dark past paved the way for their collaboration. Filipino and African Americans have had solidarity going back to the 1930s when they successfully opposed an attempt to prohibit interracial marriage. Seattle's housing segregation played a role too.
The only places that people of color could live in Seattle before the 1970s were the International District, Beacon Hill, Rainier Valley, and the Central District. And so that produces a way in which there's an overlap in different communities because the whites-only racism applied to Asians and to African Americans and to a small Latino community to some degree.
Griffey says that meant different groups needed to be allied with each other in order to be effective. By the 1970s, the Gang of Four became directors of nonprofit groups that provided much-needed services to their communities. Bernie Whitebear headed United Indians of All Tribes Foundation. Roberto Maestas founded and led El Centro de la Raza. Bob Santos was executive director of Interim in the International District. And Larry Gossett headed the Central Area Motivation Program. They continue to support each other. Their alliance would be tested during budget cuts. 1981 in particular was difficult. President Reagan had slashed federal aid to social service programs. The leaders found themselves competing for the same local funds. In this archive interview with the Seattle Civil Rights History Project, Maestas said the four of them agreed they would not let politics and scarce resources pit them against each other.
You know, we have some amazing commonalities, and we can't let these, you know, powerful, influential organizations who are controlled by white people to divide us, you know, like big, you know, fight for the crumbs.
And what they found was that a united front made them stronger and even increased the pot of money.
Look at this picture.
Back at Larry Gossett's office, he shows me a photo taken from a fundraiser in 1983. The four are dressed in white shirts and black bow ties. They performed a lip sync of I Heard It Through the Grapevine.
We turned it out. We had fun together, too.
Gossett says his friends are no longer here, but their spirit still speaks to him, reminding him to keep collaborating.
I hear these guys saying that when thoughts of me being a slacker or slacking occur in the community. Yeah, they be talking to me.
The legacy of their work continues. The organizations they founded remain a lifeline for their communities. Gossett says there's still many challenges facing minority communities today: affordable housing, income inequality, mass incarceration, to name a few. Coalition building was effective back then, he says, and he believes it can still work today. I'm Ruby DeLuna, KUOW News.